This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. We will start today with the T, where the new MBTA general manager has announced another list of repairs this summer as he tries to turn the train around, so to speak. One sign of progress, last week the agency struck a deal with the local transit workers union that advocates say could help the T hire more desperately needed bus drivers. And we will talk about that today, but we're also going to talk about some of the tough stuff. Disruptions on subway routes, cuts to bus service, a worker safety plan that federal officials sent back as unacceptable. Here to talk about all of it, Stacey Thompson, executive director of the advocacy group Livable Streets, and state representative Mike Conley of Cambridge. Stacey, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Representative, welcome back to you as well.
Good morning.
Now, this is not going to be the heart of our conversation, but I do want to acknowledge someone fell underneath a Green Line train at North Station in the early hours of this morning and died. It is a tragic loss of life. Was not able to get on the train, tried to kick at the train, fell underneath. And I want to get, Stacey, a sense of where this fits in sort of the safety profile of the MBTA. Last time we talked about the T, I remember specifically sort of saying, it's a tragedy, this is, and I want to say that again, but sometimes it becomes hard to tell what is a failure of the T, right, versus what are things that happen when there is such a litany of bad news. So again, understanding that a loss of life is tragic, put this in perspective for us, please.
Yeah. So first of all, regardless of the circumstances, this is traumatic for the individual's family. This is traumatic for the train operator, for the folks involved. This is tough. And I think we need to acknowledge that. It appears that in this case, it was likely not the operator's fault. It looks like this individual is trying to force himself onto the train and in that process fell onto the tracks. You know, we don't have all of the details, but I think that this is likely unrelated to the pattern of events that led to the FTA investigation. Having said that, it's also really important when we have major events in the city, you're going to the Celtics game, you're going to the Sox game, we see these habits of people pushing on. And it's a reminder to us all to be patient. I know that's tough, but we want to make sure everyone is safe on the system.
And that is a key piece of context. Of course, last night, Boston Celtics, which we are not covering today, loss game seven, TD Garden, North Station. This tragic death seems to have happened, you know, maybe shortly after midnight last night. Anything you want to add to this, Representative Mike Conley, before we move on to our other T subjects?
Simply, it's just a tragedy. We're just learning about it this morning, and I'd associate myself with everything that Stacey said, and, you know, hopefully we can learn from it. And, people do need to be careful, especially in those crowding situations, not to be pushing or forcing themselves on a train.
And that does seem to be a key piece of this, right? So we talked about this with the Taylor Swift concert. We talked about this with the Boston Marathon. We've talked about it in the past as well. We are putting a red hot light on the MBTA. But user participation in our transit system is a piece of this puzzle, and being aware of the platform, being aware of high use moments, being aware of the people around you, all of those other things will continue to be a piece of this equation. Yeah,
absolutely. And I think two things can be true at once. Should the MBTA be able to run more service around the clock in particular events? Yes. And that might help alleviate crowding. But also in those situations, we are responsible of taking care of each other in these spaces and making sure everyone gets home safe.
And I wanted to make sure to flag that, note it, talk about it as we move forward, because the next thing we are going to do is talk about safety. And I didn't want to conflate things inappropriately, because I do want to talk about the Federal Transit Administration and this safety plan that the T submitted and the FTA rejected. And let's go back and remind our listeners, this is after the FTA took a very strong interest in the MBTA last year. It issued a report over the summer with a number of demands to the MBTA and a scathing criticism of both the Department of, the DPU and the MBTA around safety, upkeep, et cetera. So now, after a number of near injuries to workers, the T submitted a worker safety plan to the Federal Transit Administration. The plan has to do with right-of-way repair work. What does right-of-way mean in this context?
Right-of-way basically means the tracks that the trains run on, the actual land and property that the T uses to operate.
Okay, so now the FTA is ordered to submit this safety plan in April because of four serious episodes over the course of March in which the trains came dangerously close to workers on subway tracks because of miscommunication between dispatchers and construction crews. And that's according to Boston Globe reporting in April. Representative Mike Conley, the FTA comes back to the T and says, listen, this safety plan is just going to take too long. You're looking at end of 2023, potentially into 2024, for some of this to go into action. Unacceptable. We want you to come back to us within 60 days. Your reaction to that?
I think that's terrific. You know, if that was their conclusion, then that is how it should be. You know, we safety has to be the first priority. Certainly, Governor Healey and Phil Ng have echoed that, and this is an example where these incidents can't happen. I did notice that these incidents that mostly precipitated the rejection of the plan happened before Phil Ng had been appointed. We also know recently Governor Healey appointed Patrick Lavin as the new MassDOT safety chief. So I think we're in a moment where we can expect that these folks are getting up and running and getting things right. But the time is now, and I think 2 months makes a lot of sense, and we have to get this right.
So, Stacey Thompson, it's a really tight turnaround. They have until June 5th to get a new plan back to the FTA that they can get executed in 60 days. A, are you optimistic that that will happen? And B, what else should we be paying attention to that maybe we're not thinking about here?
Yeah, so I just want to build on what the representative said here. We, in a very short timeline, a number of things happened. The FTA said, look, you need to get us a safety plan. And then we hired a new general manager. And then we brought on a new board chair for the MBTA. And then we also brought on a new safety chief. And so I think that we have the right team in place and that these are probably some of the most equipped people to rip this plan apart, start over, and get it in. I would be stunned if someone like Tom Glenn allowed the MBTA to not get it right and get this back.
Clarifying that Tom Glenn is this new board chair that Representative Conley mentioned a minute ago.
Yes. He's someone who also previously ran the T. He also ran Massport, which deals with the FAA, a similar federal system. So we have some people who really know how to dance around these issues in important positions. And just digging in a little bit into the letter, what the letter is really saying is, you know, you're kind of getting it right, but we want you to squash the long-term stuff and just go deeper on the short-term stuff. They didn't really say what you're doing is wrong. They're saying we want more and we want faster. And I do think that that is achievable. One thing they noted again is the need to hire more people on the ground. So we have the right leadership in place, but the T has really struggled to hire the appropriate folks who would be in charge of safety physically on the tracks. And I think that needs to be a priority for the general manager and the safety chief over the next couple of months.
We're speaking with Stacey Thompson of Livable Streets and State Representative Mike Conley out of Cambridge. We're doing a review of the latest on the T. And every time we wonder if we will have enough to talk about, we don't wonder for very long. I'm going to ask one more technical question on this, Stacey Thompson, and then Mike Conley, just a heads up, I'm going to turn to you and we're going to start talking about this hiring thing. So heads up on that. Stacey, the FTA has said if you don't get us the report by the new plan by June 5th and we can't get things done in 60 days, you run the risk of losing the right of way. And I don't understand how the MBTA on its tracks could run the risk of losing something called the right of way. Don't they automatically own the right of way? And am I just being silly? Do I like not need to understand this?
You're not being silly. The federal government is complicated and impossible to understand. Just by way of a little context for this, in the 1960s, after we started building highways, the federal government was sort of like, huh, we need some oversight bodies. And so the federal government constructed a series of oversight bodies. One looks at federal highways, one looks at aviation, the FAA, and one looks at transit, the FTA. The FAA has the ability, because the federal government gave it the ability, to shut down any any plane to say we are going to stop flying, which they did on 9/11, right, in extreme circumstances.
For more than one day.
Yes, for more than one day. They also they could shut down Logan if they felt that it was necessary and required, but they rarely do. I think people are more familiar with that example, but they should look to it as sort of how the FTA might operate. They have federal authority.
So I'm going to pause you for a second. FAA, Federal Aviation Administration, yes. FTA, Federal Transportation Administration.
Yes.
We're using a lot of acronyms
yes.
here.
Thank
Go
you
ahead.
Very much.
Yeah. Transit, excuse me.
Yes, transit.
Still killing me. And also, you know, DPU, Department of Public
yes.
Utilities. This stuff drives me nuts.
So, like, Go very big picture, what is happening is the Federal Transit Authority has the ability to go in at a local level and say, you're safe or you're not safe. And then the power that they have is threefold. They can hold money back as a stick. They can take over oversight, which they did in Washington in 2015. And they can actually shut down right-of-way if they deem it necessary. I don't want the—and right-of-way means they could say you can't run
you
something
can't run
on
the
this
train.
Track.
Got it.
I think that that is still an unlikely outcome at this time, given that they have other tools in their toolbox, but they do have that authority. And I do believe that the T is very serious. You know, this probably scared them a little bit and they're going to be responding.
So
directly.
That is actually a pretty big threat, at least.
Yeah, they mentioned it, but they, you know, we are still several steps away from that happening.
Okay, so turning over to State Representative Mike Conley now, because this hiring thing, which, you know, we talked about the last time we talked about the MBTA as well, after the Boston Globe did some analysis and reporting suggesting that given the hiring needs and the rate of hiring, it could take the MBTA up to 10 years to meet its hiring needs. And of course, now we have this announcement that last week the team made some strides with a union on one particular pain point, which is hiring bus drivers. And one of the pain points that they sort of diagnosed was people found it less attractive to become a bus driver when you were first hired if you had to work part-time to start. Split shifts was a piece of it, but also you weren't allowed to be a full-time worker at first. Seems that they have solved that problem. So one, really great to have, hey, there's a problem. We say we're going to fix it, and we fix it. Your reactions to that, given sort of our history of hiring challenges with the MBTA?
I think this is a really good sign. You know, we've known for a while this issue with hiring new bus drivers, and frankly, we've really lagged. You know, we've known about the bus driver problem for quite some time. We haven't made much, if at all, any progress. And, you know, I think this is a big step forward. Hats off to the governor for doing it, for the Carmen's Union, for reaching an agreement. Sometimes it's not as simple as you might think because one union contract might have implications for other union contracts. So a lot of people have to come together and work it out. And from what we've been told, it sounds like that's happened and couldn't have happened soon enough.
So that's a piece of what I'd like to understand a little bit better. Lots of people had to come to the table and say together, this needs to be fixed. We're all going to have to do something to fix it. We all want to get it done, so let's get it done. Does that, in your mind, especially as a policymaker, bode well for some of the other challenges, especially around hiring, policymakers, union, government agencies that might need to move, right, in order to solve these pretty significant hiring challenges for the MBTA?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I'm really hopeful at this announcement. You know, I will say, let's not start the celebration yet, because when it comes to the MBTA, I mean, there have been plenty of announcements that don't always pan out. But to be sure, all signs are pointing in the right direction here, and it appears to be a big step forward.
Now, at the same time, Stacey Thompson, the T is planning to release new bus schedules in early July that reflect service cuts that riders have been sort of dealing with for some time, right? Sort of service cuts to reflect delays that have been happening. And it feels like a, okay, step forward, step back. You pick the number of steps in both directions, right?
It's a dance.
Right. How many steps forward? How many steps back? Especially for buses, right?
Yeah.
Buses which have long been, you know, our systemic setup has long been criticized that buses are the most likely service in our least well-served communities, our mm-hmm. lower-income communities. You know, we have a whole set of systemic issues here, and now understaffed, services being cut, slow service. Let's put Let's put that in perspective and talk about where this hiring piece fits there.
Yeah, so I just, again, want to agree that we should not expect a miracle overnight. It's fantastic that the T has taken this first step. I think the last time we talked about this, I named three things that I thought the T needed to do.
This was one.
This was one.
You're welcome to remind us of the other two.
The other two included improving starting wages. So even with the shift to full-time, a starting salary will get you $43,000 a year. If you're a bus driver in Chicago, you're making $60,000 a year starting point with a lower cost of living. So we're talking about, you know, maybe needing to pay significantly more to just meet other transit systems and what they are providing. That will likely also take a lot of negotiation to get to that shift of our hourly wages. And then dealing with swing shifts, which means that you work a few hours, you take a break, and then you work a few hours again, which is really challenging for folks, particularly those who have children or loved ones that they're trying to take care of and manage around.
And just a quick pause there, the explanation there being people ride public transit more in the morning and the evening than in the middle of the day.
Yes. All right. And the way you can fix that is by running more service in the middle of the day. But it's sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? We don't have enough operators, so we can't run service. We cut the service, and then it goes on and on and on. For bus riders, they were the most resilient riders during the pandemic. They have stuck with the system. They, in some ways, have held the system up, and now they are sort of experiencing the worst impacts of these cuts. Even after we hire folks, they will go through months of training, and then they will start driving buses. And the MBTA sets schedules roughly every 3 months. So right now, they already know, you know, are working on that fall schedule, meaning that if they're hiring people now, we're likely the earliest we're going to really see impacts with those new operators is going to be sometime in like December or January. So this is not easy fix because it is such a skilled job, and it takes a long time to get people up to speed. But again, I'm hopeful that in a year's time, we will be back to full service on the bus system and hopefully increasing it from there.
You are listening to Radio Boston here on WBUR. I'm Tiziana Deering, and we are continuing our conversation about the MBTA with Stacey Thompson of Livable Streets and State Representative Mike Conley. Representative, I'm going to turn to you now. I want to talk about the Green Line Extension Community Bike Path. You say that the T is falling short on its promise to deliver this project in a timely manner. So let's back up a little. Late last year, the T opens 6 new Green Line stops, Somerville to Medford. The plan was to run a new bike path alongside the stretch of that new track. Tell us a little more.
Sure. Well, this has been a very desired amenity for the city of Somerville, and I represent Somerville and Cambridge. Somerville is the most densely populated city anywhere that I'm aware of. So creating this open space and this option for multimodal transit is so important. And there's really two stories here. I mean, on the one hand, we have to recognize the triumph of both the Green Line extension and the Community Path extension. We want to do more extending of the MBTA, in my mind, whether that's the red-blue connector or other options for extending the T. So on the one hand, you know, there is a triumph that we created these stations and that we're getting this path. But on the other hand, you know, the way to getting it done has been very painful and very difficult for folks for a lot of reasons. When it comes to the community path, it's a similar story. When Governor Baker pulled the plug on the Green Line extension, he pulled the community path out of the project back in 2016. Advocates like Stacey, people across our community, we rallied and we demanded that the community path extension be put back in the project. So that's been good to see. But what we've always known, the community path would be the final deliverable. So it shouldn't be unsurprising that it's the last piece to be delivered. But the communication in the past month or two has been really lacking. And of course, it's springtime, so people are out on their bicycles. They see the path. It looks in many places like it's done. It's not, it hasn't been completely finished. There are some ADA requirements that need to be finished and modified. So the bottom line I can get to is that the T actually has been responsive in the past week or so. They've had crews out there working to complete it. And so we are hopeful that we are only a matter of 2 weeks or so from a potential opening.
Okay, so two things out just to make sure I'm feeding back to you what I'm understanding. The issues have been, one, just getting it done, And two, really clear communication about when it's going to be done, and people can expect to incorporate it into their both leisure and commuting lives. But you're feeling like you've seen movement, and maybe in the next couple of weeks this is resolved.
Correct. And, you know, there was a community engagement team that was part of the GLX project. They had essentially been, you know, reassigned or moved on to other jobs. And so there was sort of a gap where there wasn't good communication. And I think the T has gotten the message and it's appreciated. So we are hopeful that there will be a happy story, hopefully in the month of June.
So, Stacy, all the time that the representative was speaking, you were punctuating, right, with nods and gestures. And so let me let you round this out.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to understate how ridiculous it is that the representative needs to follow up on this in the first place. You know, we did the ribbon cutting. We acted like the Green Line extension was done. And it is not done. This is a critical, you know, to me, a part of the legal requirement of this project. And I think that we often look at paths like this and think of them as nice to have, as recreation. But this is a really critical corridor. Many people in your district, Representative, don't have cars and they do use bikes or they walk to the train. Like, this is actually a very important commuting path that folks have been waiting for years. And I would note that we are weeks away from the Sumner Tunnel closure. And while this won't directly impact that community, we know that we're going to have some traffic impacts, and it means that more people are going to want to be walking, biking, and taking transit and avoiding getting on the roads when they can.
Okay, I don't want to spend time on this, but because you said the phrase Sumner Tunnel closure, and we may have some listeners that just went, holy cow, what? Just explain very briefly, please, what is the Sumner Tunnel closure?
Yes, so the Sumner Tunnel needs significant repairs. This summer and next summer, the Sumner Tunnel will be closed, or a portion of it shut down for the months after July 4th. So we'll get through the biggest celebration in the state. Through the months of July and August, it will be closed.
Fully closed.
And what that means is that if you're going to the airport, if you're traveling north of Boston or coming from north into Boston, you should expect to, you know, have more time or take commuter rail, take the T, and the ferry is a fantastic option. So maybe it's something we can chat about as we get closer to it. But it's going to have impacts on surrounding communities as well. And that's why something like the GLX path is not frivolous. It is really part of a strategy to help people get to their jobs, to their friends, et cetera.
We're talking about the latest in the MBTA with Stacy Thompson, who you just heard, of Livable Streets, and State Representative Mike Conley from Cambridge. So two things we just were talking about, Green Line Extension, communications, both things that I want to talk about. Let's stay with Green Line Extension for a minute because March 2022, the first part opens, December 2022, more opens, June 2023, closures. I don't know if repairs is the right word, but for work, which feels surprising. And yet also, Stacy, you did just note, not really fully done. Mike Conley, that is the explanation for why there will be closures on the Greenland Extension and buses. As a state representative, a steward, react to that.
Well, it's outrageous. You know, as Stacy alluded to, these aren't niceties. These are essential amenities that the public needs to get from point A to point B. You know, one related element, which I also think has been outrageous, has been that demolition of the government center garage. And, you know, let's be clear, that's a private commercial real estate development that apparently something went wrong in the demolition and it's created some uncertainty. And so we've had numerous occasions, and it's even continuing to be referred to in the current closures, that, you know, there needs to be shutdowns to accommodate. And so I certainly hope there will be, you know, some degree of equity around the imposition on the public there. And then more broadly, you know, I think the T has to learn from what went well, but also from what didn't go well with the Green Line Extension. You know, our public entities need to build the capacity to actually do projects. And so there's certainly a lot of different ways we can look at that, but I'm hopeful that, you know, we can learn from this and then move on to the next project, you know, whether that's the Red-Blue Connector or the North-South Rail Link, and actually execute it better.
So that one isn't having to do shutdowns so soon after launching something like this.
Correct.
And is that a reasonable expectation, Stacy Thompson, that one should be able to go? Because maybe it's not, and I just don't know. that one should be able to go several years after the opening of a new line before one has to shut it down and go to shuttle service in order to do work on those tracks.
Yeah, this is somewhat unusual. It isn't unusual for a new extension to have some bumps in the road. You know, things literally start moving. You're like, oh, we need adjustment here and adjustment there. It's like getting into a brand new house, and then you realize, you know, there are tweaks here and there that need to be made. These are slightly more substantial than we might like to see in a situation like this. And we should, you know, the words we're looking for are state of good repair. We need to get to a point where it's standard maintenance that's happening every once in a while. And we're just not there yet.
That is not what's going on in this case. Do you want to address the other closures that are coming over the summer?
Yeah, I mean,
and put them in the context of the slow zones still in place across multiple lines that were put in place in the last few months. Excuse me for interrupting you.
So we're coming back to, in some ways, where we began with the FTA. So the slow zones are a result of FTA oversight, saying that these are, you know, across the system, there are several areas where it's not safe to run at the highest speed. The T is now in a very challenging position of figuring out what portions of track to prioritize. And they're choosing shutdowns or, you know, extended, you know, closing at 6, 7 p.m., opening a little later, these night closures, because that's the most efficient way to get work done. It takes time to get equipment on the track, to get to shut the track down. So they need a certain number of hours to even get the work done. So they're making hard choices. But again, we've neglected the tracks for decades. And so this is not a touch-up job. They need to do real work and they need the time to do it.
So this is a great moment for me to note that we have reached out to the MBTA. We have invited the new general manager, Philip Eng, to come on to Radio Boston. We used to actually have the opportunity to speak with GM Steve Poftak on a fairly regular basis. We will continue to reach out to the MBTA. We would love to have the general manager come frequently, respond to our listeners and our texting group. So we would love to have that open conversation as we go forward.
I would encourage the MBTA to be more transparent and to come on the air and to answer those questions. You know, with this community path situation in our community, I've been getting hundreds of emails, and it's because the public doesn't know what's going on. And so there are many people who just see the path, they see a fence up, they don't understand what's going on. The T hasn't done enough, I think, to explain what's happening. And so I seriously think we need more information. Tell us how bad it is. Be honest with us, and we'll take it from there.
Have you had any contact with the new chief communications officer hired from Boston Public Schools, Gabrielle Mondeston?
Personally, I haven't yet. There are a couple of different liaisons who work closely with me on the T staff, but certainly I think that's a hopeful sign. Hopefully that will be an opportunity to do more communicating.
And how about you, Stacey Thompson? Reaction to that hire? Any outreach? Any contact?
Yeah, so she just started. So we have not reached out to her yet. I anticipate that we will be connecting at some point. And I think it's just part of this puzzle, right? I do think it is appropriate for the public to hear from the general manager from time to time. He is not the only person that should be communicating. There need to be a number of people working with elected officials, working with municipal officials, to help get the word out, and then, you know, at a deeper layer, making sure that folks that are at transit stations, at bus stops, also know how to get the word out. We've seen that there's sort of a lack of communication at nearly every level of the system, and so I think getting the general manager on the radio is a start, but we need a complete overhaul so that folks can go to the website and find out what's going on at GLX instead of emailing their representative.
So, Representative, back to you in the little bit less than 2 minutes we have left. We are in budget season, right? Back and forth, the House, the Senate, the governor, eventually it will all be reconciled. We will have a new budget. Where do you think T funding, both capital and ongoing, stands, and what do you want to see?
You know, I think generally speaking, the legislature has made some important steps forward. It's important to remember, I mentioned earlier, building public capacity. And we had lost so much capacity at the T to execute projects. And, you know, I hope the Green Line is the first chapter in many chapters of expanding the T and improving the T. So certainly, you know, the other piece that I'll add is we should be clear about why we got here. We got here because of decades of austerity And we got here because, in my personal opinion, as a progressive, I don't think we've had tax fairness in our state. And so I think the Fair Share Amendment, where we made that choice to say the wealthiest in our state will pay more of their fair share, and that will go to help fund transportation improvements, that's the kind of thing we need to build upon going forward.
And that is the tax on earnings over $1 million in a given year that goes to both education and transportation.
Yes.
All right. And Stacey Thompson, 30 seconds, your budget priorities, what you hope to see from the legislature?
Yeah, definitely more funding for safety. But also, I just want to note that the Senate included funds to make the regional transit authorities free for 6 months and test that. We would love to see that make it through reconciliation and really move forward on fare free policies and low income fare policies, help people be able to afford the system as we also repair it.
And we are seeing more experimentation with that now than we have at times in the past, Representative. Is that correct?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, certainly the results we've seen out of Boston have been really exemplary.
All right. State Representative Mike Conley from Cambridge, Stacey Thompson, Executive Director of Livable Streets. We joke about it. Every time we think we're going to do the tea on Tuesdays, will we have things to talk about? We have many. So thanks to both of you for coming in.
Thank you.
Thanks.